I'd like to acknowledge Australia's First Nation people as the traditional custodians of the land, and for this episode in particular, the Gadigal people. I pay my respects to their elders past, present and emerging.
Employers really need to look at the landscape and need to look at what is attractive about my business to draw in talent and to retain talent. And I'm just a huge believer of professional development and education as the centrepiece for that.
This is Over a Glass. I'm Shantae Whale.
Sarah Andrews operates in almost all important educational and scholarly sectors within the Australian drink scene. She is a huge contributor to academic learning in this country, and I'm thrilled to have her on the podcast to discuss more. Hi, Sarah, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you, Shantae. Thank you so much for the invitation. It's a very rare opportunity for the two of us to have a one-to-one.
It is indeed, and I've just been following along. I feel like you're such a consistent face that I see kind of in my social media, and I'm always kind of following what you're doing. So it is nice to just sit down and have a bit of a chat. As I said to you earlier, I'm fascinated to know how you manage to fit in so much into your 24 hours of each day. But let's first have a little bit of an insight into your background and how you kind of found your way into wine.
Sure. I reflect maybe many people that it was never on the radar in terms of a professional career. I guess I had a little bit of an insight growing up in Bendigo. Our family were growers and had some of the oldest vineyards in Bendigo. So I had a viticultural understanding, but we were only ever growers. And certainly before I went overseas, I had some involvement, but not a lot of involvement. I was heading down the route of, and I still am, I guess, a lifelong student, but whilst I was studying, I was involved in hospitality and catering to sort of pay my way through university. And it wasn't until I was about to start a PhD in paediatric research that I decided to just head overseas for 6 weeks just to see what the other world, sort of the world was all about. And that's where the course of my future changed for the rest of my life.
So you studied a degree, or you did your master's. What did you study at university?
So I studied two degrees, Bachelor of Arts, Bachelor of Science. And with science, it was psychology and physiology. That it was a research project on sudden infant death syndrome that actually sort of opened my eyes as to medical research. And my first job out of university was actually in the paediatric department at Monash Medical Centre. And that's where I was I awarded a scholarship and was starting, 1998. I was meant to be starting in February this PhD, and I went overseas 6 weeks prior and didn't return for 7 years.
Wow. I mean, so big a scope in terms of what you were studying and such important work. So you went overseas, as a lot of us do, desperate to escape our tiny island and to see the wider world. Where did you go to first, and how come you didn't come back?
So I met up with some friends in London, and at that time the exchange rate was absolutely horrific, and I can't remember what happened next. I did a little bit of a travel in Europe, and just my eyes were opened to the food and wine scene, to the proximity to Europe, and I realised that I wanted to stay a little bit longer. And having studied my whole life and squashed 2 degrees into 4 years and then done honours, I didn't think I was ready to do another 3 years study. So I got myself a job. I actually had to phone my parents, because back then I wasn't on email. And I said, I'm not coming back. I'm not quite sure when I'm coming back. I've declined my scholarship and a PhD. I'm still going to be involved in the medical research papers that I'd been involved in. I still had to sign off on them as they were being published. So that was my backup if I decided that what I was doing was absolutely crazy. But I've never looked back.
Oh my gosh. That stresses me out just hearing about that phone call. What was your parents' reaction?
Oh, they were Oh, they were quite shocked. They'd never been overseas. And they, I think they first asked me, was I in trouble? Did they need to come and get me? Was I okay? And I said, yes, that I just felt really alive. And that with all of the UK to explore and the ability to earn pounds and to spend weekends in Europe, that I felt really alive. And I was fine financially. I was earning money. I had somewhere good to live. I had new friends. And then I slowly was immersed into the world of culinary delights and wine. And I just kept coming back to it. I was working, I changed jobs and I was in completely different industries. I worked in headhunting in like banking, and which was really good money. Hated it. But that allowed me to dine and to travel. And the more I dined, the more I was curious about hospitality and food and wine, and especially wine. And so I, in headhunting and recruitment, I sort of headhunted myself out of this industry that I didn't like and studied wine and spirit education trust. Or actually before I did that, I had a chance meeting with it was a chance meeting. I reached out to Lee and Sanderman, importers, distributors, and I still don't know why, but Patrick Sanderman agreed to meet me. And I didn't realise it at the time, but he was actually interviewing me to see whether there was a place for me in his organisation. And I laugh about this now, but he asked me a question about Cabernet Sauvignon. And he said, well, tell me about Cabernet Sauvignon, Sarah. He said, what descriptors would you use? And I sort of looked at him blankly, and he said, well, what would be the number one fruit profile that you might talk about? And I just looked at him blankly and I thought, my goodness, I don't know how to answer this question. And I do laugh now in the role that I'm in. And I said, and he said, well, just give me one fruit descriptor. And I said, well, dark fruit. And he said, that's a cluster, that's not a fruit. And I said, well, I don't know. And he said, well, the classic description, Sarah, is blackcurrants. He said, may I suggest you look up the Wine and Spirit Education Trust? And he said, you study to understand more about wine. And when you've done that, come back to me and we'll go from there.
I love that. I mean, at least you didn't say grapes. I mean, that seems like the obvious answer when you're in a pickle like that. But I can totally understand that kind of the blank, you know, nothingness that comes at the forefront of your, when you're asked a direct question, you know, in the early days, and you just think, oh, I've forgotten who I am. I don't know what's happening.
Oh my goodness. It was so funny. But I did what he said, and I studied level 2 award in wine and spirits. And then literally 2 weeks later, I did the intense level 3. I got the textbook when I turned up to class on Monday. We had 10 minutes on Australia at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and I set my exam at 3 o'clock. And I think I had about 10 hours sleep that whole week. But I loved it and I passed. And I then sent off my CV to loads of places. And it was my first job was with Soho Wine Supply. And they were established in 1890. And it was a Greek family that ran this import distribution business. And I remember the two sons wanted to employ me, and their father said, absolutely not. And one of the sons came back to me and he said, oh, look, I'm really sorry, Sarah. He said, we just can't employ you. And I said, well, can you give me a valid reason why so I can improve? And he said, I don't think you can. He said, it's because you're a woman. And I said, what do you mean? And he said, we've never employed a woman in our business since 1890. And he said, well, just because you haven't doesn't mean you shouldn't. And I said, have I got the skills that you're looking for? Yes, Sarah. I said, do you like me as a person from what you've seen so far? Yes, Sarah. I said, so what's the problem? And he called his brother in, and he didn't call his father in, interestingly. And I was staring at both of them and I said, you need to tell me the reason why. And they looked really uncomfortable. And I said, I can handle it. Just tell me for my understanding and I'll say goodbye. And they kind of shuffled on their feet and said, you know how the warehouse is downstairs and we have drivers that do the deliveries and you've met the drivers. Well, there's only one toilet and it's all men that work here and we just don't think that's appropriate.
And nor was it, I don't doubt.
No, it probably wasn't. And I just said, look, I said, if I'm willing to cope with it and call out if I'm not okay, let's give me a month's trial and let's see what happens. And they did. And I started the next week. And on my second day, they said to me, we're taking some of our best sommeliers to Bordeaux for a trip for 3 days. We think it would be beneficial for you to join. Would you like to go? And that literally, that sealed my fate in the wine industry, and the rest really is history. Having 3 days in Pauillac at Chateau Pruillac and brushing shoulders with up-and-coming young sommeliers, it exposed me to the wine industry. It exposed me to sommeliers. I got to hear their stories, and that's where my interest in becoming a sommelier was fueled, right back there in Pauillac.
Wow. I mean, now that I've heard just that one simple story, the word that comes to mind is formidable. And I think that really, really suits kind of the approach that you must have had, you know, at that time with kind of hurdles like that. You seem to be a very good student. Now, I don't know if that's the right thing to say, but I would like to know, what do you think makes a good student? And have you always found it quite easy to study, considering that you did an amazing degree and then you went on to study something that you really love? Have you found the process of kind of formal study something that comes easy to you?
I wouldn't say it comes easy, but I have the discipline to study and I have the hunger to learn more. I always want to know more. And Shante, you would know in the wine industry, the more you learn, the more you realise you just don't know. And that just carries on. And I just remember being older than these young sommeliers, not by much, but feeling so inadequate. And I was a sponge. I just listened to the way they spoke about wine and they described wine. And then there was the overlay of talking about food and wine pairings. And I just thought, I want to be able to do that. I want to be one of those people. I had the pleasure of bringing food and wine together and sharing that with a stranger or with someone I know just is so exciting. Let's go. Let's do it. So it's the discipline. It's the discipline to be able to set aside time. It's when you don't feel like studying that you have got a regime that you just get up early in the morning or you finish your shift late at night. Anthony Pieri is a good friend of mine and I listened to your podcast with him and he said exactly the same thing. And he's a scholar and he is hugely successful. And we were both MW students together for a period of time and the discipline that he had to, you know, get up early in the morning at, you know, 5 a.m. and do 2 hours before he went to work. That's the regime you need to succeed. But the outcome is that extra knowledge that you have is the reward.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. It is sometimes the simplest things of just having a routine that you stick to and or figure out what works for you. And everyone is so different. So, you know, you kind of have to have a bit of that trial and error. I agree with you. What has been kind of in your study, what has been the greatest course for development for you? Because you have studied on lots of different programs. Is it Wesset that you found that you developed the quickest or the furthest that you've kind of delved into study?
Great question. I still remember when I decided to undertake the diploma. I was living in Melbourne and it was only available at Sydney Wine Academy and I was going to have to commute for 2 years. I was funding it myself and it was just everything around that was just a huge commitment. And I reached out to a few people I didn't know that completed the diploma or were undertaking it. And I remember speaking to a lawyer in New Zealand that worked at a winery. And she said to me, Sarah, she said, this is the hardest qualification I've ever achieved. She said, it made law like a walk in the park. And I remember thinking to her, oh, you struggled as a student. I'll be fine. How wrong was I. The diploma taught me, because it's got a viticulture vinification, there's a tasting component, you delve into the world of wines, but there's also a business component. And it challenged me beyond my limits, but I didn't have funding to not pass first time each unit. I only had enough funding for flights, accommodation, and the course and the exams. So for 2 years, I set myself that challenge, and I passed within the 2 years. And I then saw the merits of that course and the qualification. And that's when I became an educator, and that's when I became training the educators, and that's what's led me to my role now. And dovetailing back into the earlier question you asked about being a student, having gone through that journey, I see now the importance of educators to check on students' resources and skills and what they need to be their best student themselves, because not everyone can learn the same way. Some people are visual, some people are audio, some people need both, some people need case studies. And I think it's the best educators that fast track their knowledge of their students will set students up for best success. And I guess that's my passion now.
Incredible that you have that approach. What I really have always liked about WESET was I felt there was an anchor point for checking in, turning up to classes, having somebody where you could roll ideas with. I felt like it was more of a journey along with people for the ride, rather than perhaps other courses of study where it was very, very personal. And I probably felt like, you know, there was times where I needed to check in or just kind of, you know, have that sense of camaraderie around it. And you have to seek that out no matter what you do. But in terms of when you decided to come back to Australia, because we've kind of skipped over that, when did you decide to come back to Australia, and how did you find the world of wine when you got back to the land of Oz?
Yeah, wow. Again, like, great questions. London was just so influential on my career. And if I take one quick step back and in just 1 minute summarise it, my initial just eyes wide open was seeing the success of Australian chefs in London. It was the Christine Mansfield from East at West. It was David Thompson from Rome. And it was then meeting Brett Graham, who was a really young chef at the Square, who's gone on and set up the Ledbury, which is now a 3 Michelin star. And I was just so intrigued with the on-premise side of things that I was working in imports and distribution. I was working weekends in this boutique retail store in Maida Vale. And then I was doing cameo shifts at restaurants just to get experience. It was personal reasons. I'd been away and my father was quite unwell, and it made me sort of think about the future and family time that I'd missed for 7 years. And my partner at the time, a Kiwi, was actually heading to Australia when we met. And I wasn't ready to go back to Australia, and we compromised on timelines and agreed 2 years and then we would go back to Australia. So we did a recce to Australia. They wanted to live in Sydney, I wanted to live in Melbourne. So we spent a week in both and agreed that we'd fly back to London and we would then do the pros and cons of each and hopefully end up in the same city. And we did, and it was Melbourne. And I arrived back beginning of 2005. I was in London as very much the Have You Met the Australian Wine Lady. I arrived back in Melbourne and it was Have You Met the English Wine Lady that's just arrived in Melbourne. And I'm like, no, I'm Bendigo born and bred. I might have a bit of a hybrid accent, but no, I'm very much Australian. And I came back with a wealth of knowledge of wine all around the world, but realised I just had no idea what was going on in Australia. So my next task was just to get out and about and to find out about the Australian wine scene, but also to find out about hospitality and where I might fit in both of those industries.
Yeah, it must have been, I mean, exciting. And you are, like you said, somebody that's hungry for learning. So a new topic for you, Australian wine, when you got back. Where did you land? Where did you find yourself working when you settled back in Melbourne?
And again, Shantae, I did a crazy thing, and I look back on it now, and there's no way I would do it with the business acumen that I have. I set up my own distribution business called Cellador Wines, which phonetically, if you anywhere you pronounced it in Germany or Spain or France, it was Cellador. And my concept was to represent boutique smaller Australian wineries and get them to market. And I did that for a year or two, and then I dipped my toe in the water and started importing from New Zealand and grew the business to a certain size. And whilst I was doing that, I saw the benefit, although I wasn't earning a lot of money because it was just going back into the business. That's when I could see that I could fit in study as well, because I could be flexible and be my own boss. Diploma hadn't arrived. I thought it was already in Australia. So I looked around and thought, well, what's next? And it was Quartermaster Sommeliers. So I'm like, well, let's give that a go. So I completed the introductory and the certified sommelier qualifications, which was fantastic, because that was then the next trajectory into moving from imports and distribution into consulting. And so a lot of the clients that I was selling to, I reinvented myself as a freelance sommelier. And I started doing some wine lists and training staff, becoming a wine buyer. And I slowly transitioned into that landscape at the same time that I was completing my diploma.
Yeah.
That was my first 10 years, 12 years back in Australia.
Holy moly. I mean, do you ever just go to the beach or like, you know, have a nap in the day? Is there anything that you do that's not working?
Funnily enough, my partner is a big believer of weekend naps in the afternoon, and I have tried one or two, and I quite like them. I am booking a week's holiday in May, and I have said I actually fancy going to a beach and just lying and reading a novel. So, yes, I do.
I'm really glad to hear that, because that human side is very important. But you really are somebody that just is such a go-getter, and it's absolutely inspiring and scary to hear as well, because it does make me think, Christ, what am I doing with my life? But tell me a little bit about...
Oh, you do plenty. You do plenty. I follow you on Instagram as well. And same back at you.
Oh, too funny. I'd like to know, now that you are president of Sommeliers Australia, you're highly involved in WSET education, what do you see as some of the hurdles for getting young people involved in the beverage sector? And now that WSET has branched out to beers, you're in spirits, you do a bit of everything, and you've also seen the industry from kind of the entire landscape. Why do you think it is challenging to get young people, or is it not, into the beverage industry of Australia?
I think it still is a challenge. I think we've still got... we've got bad practices that need to be changed, and that's not to be critical, because I am in the industry that I'm wanting to improve. I think there needs to be greater flexibility at work. I think the way young professionals get paid needs to change. I think the balance of life needs to be considered, and I think the pandemic really showed us that there was a massive loss of incredible talent when everyone came out the other side and had a reflection and thought, you know what, my personal life is probably more important than my working life. I want to work to be able to live, not live to work. And I think employers really need to look at the landscape and need to look at what is attractive about my business to draw in talent and to retain talent. And I'm just a huge believer of professional development and education as the centrepiece for that. I think employers... that get it right are the ones that do invest in their staff and do pay for them to complete WSET. It's the likes of Trader House Group and Leanne that is the educator and delivering level 2 and level 3 awarding wine to her staff. That is a huge investment, and the staff work together, they play together, they progress their careers together. They have successful careers, but their staff retention is really high. And I think that is a really great working example of a business that gets it right and sees the value. WSET is in the process at the moment of launching some case studies of businesses all around the world that are doing this, and where we actually now have case evidence of, from a beverage spend doubling to staff retention tripling and loss of employment down to zero. And all of that affects the bottom dollar of a business and makes it more robust, but it makes it for a happier workplace. And I think that's paramount.
It's certainly, you certainly do see the success of the bigger groups that, I shouldn't say bigger groups, I should say, like you said, the employees that do understand that furthering someone's education really gives them a true sense of purpose. I was always interested because I thought, you know, sommeliers and the kind of drink staff always had options in hospitality, and I wanted to see that a little bit more spread out for other opportunities for hospitality staff, because I do feel that, you know, being able to put down courses that you've completed and goals that you've achieved really kind of pulls at, you know, what your sense of worth is in a business. So in terms of growing, you know, WSET and moving into spirits and beers, what has that experience been like?
From a both a personal and professional perspective, it's been incredible. I remember completing the unit of spirits in the diploma and flying up to Sydney thinking, I'm going to absolutely hate this and I'm going to fail it and I don't like spirits and I don't understand it. And I remember finishing with a liquor cabinet that had the value of about $1,000 and falling in love with Madeira, and the rest is history. So when I had the opportunity to complete level 3 award in spirits and then be educated to become a teacher, and now I train educators throughout Asia Pacific to become spirits educators, it's just been, I think I've been given a gift. But I actually get paid to do it, so it's wonderful. And we now have, I think, probably 10 level 3 educators in Australia and New Zealand. And I'm heading to the Australian Distillers Conference at the end of this month to promote WSET, which is hugely exciting because craft distilleries in Australia is just going back gangbusters. There's like 200 distilleries. There's 100 being built. So from an industry perspective, there's so much potential in upskilling for domestic sales and international sales. And we're about to do that again with beer. And we're such a big beer nation from production through to passion. I've had the pleasure of being able to recruit Jane Lewis, who was formerly Two Birds Brewing. So I've now got a playmate, a professional playmate in Melbourne. I've got a colleague. And we're really excited about what's yet to unfold in the Australian industry. So, Shante, it's really, really exciting times for WSET in Australia.
It really is. And I think it's probably something that we need to talk about a little bit more. It's gone gangbusters since I studied, and I really enjoyed my experience with WSET. I really enjoyed the different characters and the leaders, the teachers that I had, from Annette Lacey to Clive. I enjoyed their different styles of teaching, and I found I got a lot from them. But it is absolutely flipped and changed. It is a whole different stratosphere now, and I think we need to probably revisit talking about WSET a little bit more and the opportunities that there are. I'd like to know a little bit about, you're the Chair of Diversity and Inclusion in the working group. What does that role involve, and how did that come about?
Sure. So I kind of pendulum between three D&I working groups: Sommeliers Australia, the International Sommeliers Association, Association de la Sommelier International, and then WSET. And WSET, that evolved at the time that Black Lives Matter came to the fore during the pandemic. And to the credit of WSET, we had a really long look at our profile and who we were internally, as well as externally, and realised that we really weren't balanced internally. But I had more of a passion to be on the external working group because there was a lot of initiatives that were being launched in the Americas and the UK. And the message that I got was, well, you know, APAC's okay. We don't really need to do anything there. And I put my hand up and I said, so when there's over 460 deaths in custody and we have major Indigenous issues, and I would anticipate that any Indigenous professionals wanting to get into hospitality or become a sommelier would probably have barriers at their first thought, let alone stepping into a classroom. I said, so I want a seat at the table. And so that's how I joined the external working group. And to the credit of WSET, they have given me the power and funding to take that to the next level. And we are in collaboration with the National Indigenous Culinary Institute, offering fully funded courses for level one. Initially, it was a level one award in wine, but now we're open to offer it to spirits and to beer. And it's generally been their chefs that have gone through, their interns that have an interest in this side of the industry. And I'm on that journey with some incredible young professionals, and that's been hugely rewarding. But I see it's bringing equity. I love the word equity. Equality will never ever exist anywhere, but equity is giving a person the opportunity to achieve their dreams and their goals personally and professionally. It's equipping them with skills, ability, support, and that's an important space that I'm very passionate about.
Yeah, and you're exactly the right person to do it. That's wonderful to hear. Do you think, I'm throwing you a bit of a curveball here, but do you think we have a bit of work to do in the kind of cultural education of how we communicate about alcohol? I think that there is a RSA is something certainly we see in terms of service in venues and clubs, but I feel that perhaps as Australians and a long history of drinking culture, perhaps there needs to be a little bit more of a spotlight on the communication of alcohol culture. Do you agree?
Oh, absolutely, Shante. This is, you've touched on something that I am really passionate about. I do a lot of work in the no-low space, no and low alcohol, and I see that there does need to be a seismic shift for certain generations. Millennials are absolutely stepping away from alcohol. They're choosing to drink less. When they do, they spend higher, but they prefer to moderate a lot more than my generation and the generations above me. I still remember when I decided to do publicly a Feb fast, and I think it was during the pandemic, and I realised that I didn't quite have everything balanced. And I thought, let's go on a discovery and see what no-low products are out there. So every day I will try something and I'll do an Instagram post. And I think, and it was for the 28 days in February, I think I probably had to try about 60 products to find one that I was happy to put my name to. Hmm. But I remember getting messages on Instagram, but also privately, with industry professionals, people that I knew really well, asking if I was okay. And at the end of that month, I remember thinking, wow, no wonder people find it challenging in social settings if they choose not to drink and they're questioned as to why. So I really do believe we need to change our communication, respect for other people's decisions, and the way we promote and talk about alcohol. I think that's I think you've addressed something really, really important to us in this market.
Yeah, and I think, you know, no and low is a very exciting realm as well, but I think it's a little bit of a shame in terms of perhaps where we've got to in terms of drinking culture and where we think it's headed. And I want people to enjoy all the different beverages in the world. I think there's a place for all of them. So I think it really comes down to, you know, some of the language we use. And I'll share that with that COVID time as well. I saw so many memes, and this is, you know, obviously what Meta is serving up to me, but so many memes about kind of being drunk at you know, 11 a.m. because there's nothing to do. All these things that I thought, that is so toxic. Why does anyone find that funny? And why can that, why are we promoting that? That's horrific. So I think that, you know, everything in moderation, and hopefully we can, you know, just keep improving the way we talk about it, because I do think that we do have, as professional communicators, we do have such a responsibility to talk about balance and health and, you know, longevity.
We do. And it's like we work in an industry that does have its vagaries, and there are many professionals that are on that really fine line of things being okay and things not being okay. And it just is so easy to slip onto the other side. And we all have stories of people that we know have been there. You know, some of them have come back and some never have. And I lost someone really significant in my life in 2018 who unfortunately had gone so far that he couldn't be saved. And so I have a personal experience of seeing that. And if there's anything I can do to try and make the environment more balanced or provide more support or just to be able to create an awareness to prevent that, then I think it's a good thing.
Absolutely. I completely second that. Sarah, what keeps you engaged in your job? What do you love? What is the most rewarding part?
It's seeing the professional success of others. It is it's having just that the tiniest part in helping someone get over the line, whether it be mentor someone that can't get through a diploma exam, finally get through and get that qualification. It's a student that maybe fails their theory for level three and nutting out why they're failing and getting them over the line. It's seeing young professionals develop their career and having the hope that one day there will be someone that I've supported in a tiny little way that I will be able to look at and go, wow, they have gone on and achieved far more than I will ever achieve in my life. I know where they started and I've got no idea where they're going to end up, but go them. That would be it.
I love that. Yeah. Pretty cool to know you've played a little part in that and or a huge part in that, no doubt. When you're stocking your own cellar, what are you stocking it with these days?
To be honest, not a lot, because I've got a lot of aged wine that is sitting there that I'm enjoying. I am an avid fan of buying young Riesling and taking that on a journey. Chardonnay, and from reds, probably Pinot and Cabernet Sauvignon would be my two favourites. Fortifieds, if I was to look at a whole category, I absolutely adore, whether it's Rutherglen or Madeira. Again, the diploma taught me to always have a Madeira in the fridge for a cheeky little tipple. And I know that you love sherry, as do I.
Yeah, it's just a good, if I was just going to have one glass of something, I just find this, you know, in sherry and Madeira, but I can never afford it. Yeah, there's just something that just intrigues me the whole way through. So satisfying and just, you know, palate length for days that you can, you know, sit 45 minutes later and still be tasting new things, which is pretty awesome. So we definitely have, we should, when we meet in person, have a nice sherry or Madeira together.
Absolutely. Well, you bring the sherry and I can bring the Madeira.
Oh, done. Absolutely done. Well, I think I've won there. Now, tell me, if you could only have, and I know this is a big question, so if you could only have three beverages for the rest of your life, what would they be? Three drinks today. You can change them tomorrow, but what would they be today?
Oh, goodness. Three beverages. I think it would have to be champagne for the pleasure and the happiness. And champagne is never something that you have on your own. It is always with someone. So there's always a story, a memory that you can then reflect on in time. So that would be one. The second one probably would be I do absolutely adore Chardonnay. I love the nuances of tightly coiled and tension and just purity of fruit through to the artisan winemaking and everything in between. So that would be my second one. What would my third one be? It would probably have to be Cabernet Sauvignon. I remember doing a research project on Cunaburra Cabernet, and there was this myth around it not being popular, and it ended up being that consumers absolutely loved it, but it was the accessibility to Cabernet Sauvignon. But again, I love the structure and the change in structure and fruit and the ageability and black storytelling, which I love doing. I love the journey of a wine. So that would be my third one for now. But ask me tomorrow and it would probably change with my mood, what I'm wearing, my location.
And that's totally okay, because that would be my answer too. But I like that. We've kind of come full circle with the, you know, dipping your toes in the water in Pauillac and kind of finishing up. It is such a joy to speak to you. You're incredible in what you do. I'm in total awe. And we're so lucky that you decided to come back to Australian shores and do it all here. So thank you so much, Sarah.
Thank you so much for your time, and have a great day. Cheers.
This is Over a Glass. I'm Shantae Whale. Stay tuned for more stories from the world of wine and drinks. Listen in every Thursday on your podcast app. Follow us on Instagram at Over a Glass Pod, and contact us at overaglass@deepintheweeds.com.au.